Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, a lot of people, we put out a Twitter graphic. Brendan does a great job on these. Are the Astros done? What else do you want? A lot of people are saying they still want center field, which I get. Like, you're getting next to nothing out of center field. Jake Myers looks, he doesn't look healthy to me. I'm being completely honest with you. Chaz McCormick's a guy. He's all right. He's like a fourth outfielder
really
type.
Really pressing, though, too.
Jake?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so. I think there's several guys pressing right now. I think Jake is. I think Kyle Tucker is.
I think you're right.
I run out of ground ball, Kyle Tucker.
Well, when you see him doing the multiple batting gloves things and things like that, now you know mentally there's things going on that we haven't even factored in terms of how much he's grinding.
He's searching for things outside of baseball that can get him going. Yep. So that's always something to think about. And Jeremy Pena right now is reeling a little bit, too. If I'm still very high on Jeremy Pena, obviously. I'm not going to let
him. See the comparison last night?
With Correa?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting that it's, you know, for the amount of money you saved, you're almost right there with Correa, which is fantastic.
No, it was a great decision by James Click. There's no doubt about that. Now, Pena is reeling a bit offensively.
He is.
He's been reeling a bit. The one thing that Pena has to improve, because I think he's going to be an all-star level shortstop, he's got to get better play discipline in two fronts. One, attacking certain pitches in the zone. Like yesterday, that 3-1 count, he swings at a pitch outside of the zone. Now you got a 3-2 count, and then he takes a fastball in the outer half. Like, one, take that pitch, draw ball four. He's not walking a whole lot, but then also be aggressive with the pitches that you can handle in the zone in those spots. That's what's going to elevate his game offensively.
Yeah, no, I look at him and think the same thing. He's pressing a little bit. I mean, he knows what everybody is looking at. He knows what he's being compared to. And we've said this from the very get-go, just be the very best Jeremy Pena you can be. No one expects you to be Carlos Correa. And you can't outlive the reputation Carlos Correa has put in the city of Houston amongst Astros fans. But you know what? What you've done already so far has impressed everyone that's an Astros fan that's watching this team on a consistent basis. And because of the lineup that's still around you, you don't have to do extra special things. Just be the best version of you can be, and they'll make it work around you. And I think that even as much as fans, you know, fans are looking to poke holes in him. Like when we had the person on Twitter kept coming at us about his defense. And you don't take the time like do to go delving into the numbers and look at the fact that he is not a below average shortstop. But if he makes one mistake, it's going to be magnified like he doesn't have any range and he can't throw.
Yeah, it's also the sensationalism of one way over the other, because he'll have a bad play or whatever. But then the very next play, he'll make a brilliant play in the hole that saves you a run, but no commentary on that. So it's kind of like, you know, creating a narrative. 713-780-ESPN, trade deadline day in baseball, about 4 hours away, a little under 4 hours away. 713-780-3776. A lot of folks want a center fielder. I get it. I understand why. I just don't love the center field market. Michael A. Taylor, sure, whatever. A slight upgrade, but then if he reverts back to who he's been offensively his entire career, and not probably not much of an upgrade. The sexy name, the splash to me, if you're trading for a center fielder, would be Brian Reynolds, the center fielder from Pittsburgh. The reservations I have for Brian Reynolds, and look, if they announced that they traded for Reynolds in the next 2 minutes, I'd be excited about what he brings to this lineup. Defensively, I don't think he's a center fielder. I really think he's a corner outfielder long term, which is fine. The Astros have a need for left field next year. Yep. But he's also not quite hitting to the level that people seem to think he's hitting at. So what is the cost going to be? Like, if you're talking about a Hunter Brown, Pedro Leon for Brian Reynolds, that scares me off of Brian Reynolds. So I like Brian Reynolds to a certain degree. I just don't want to cross that line. That's what spooks me on a Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, look, I get it. And you're right, because, you know, you've mentioned in the past with Brantley probably departing after this season, that you've got a guy built and ready to just pop over to left field and be your long-term replacement. But I think that, again, it all comes down to me to the price that you have to pay. You know, Pirates looking to rebuild are going to be looking for prospects, hopefully more along the single double-A level. They're not going to be looking as much for those triple-A and major league-ready roster-like players, but you don't know. And again, if there are other teams that are still looking and get desperate for a center fielder, and if any way, shape, or form, you know, they get an offer from somebody else, I don't think you should overpay. I don't think you should overpay and then hope guys figure things out offensively or defensively. So I think you have to be, you know, really smart like James Click has been to this point. Look, the bonus is that, you know, it's almost unheard of that you get a team that makes three moves. And we were talking about this during the break. But the fact that he could make four or five simply because of what he gave up in day one and the fact that it wasn't nearly what we thought he was going to have to part with to get some of the type players that he got, gives you even more options and more hope that this team could actually possibly get better. That's saying something for a team that's the second best record in the American League, that has been rolling along and just taking names and kicking ass on some of the better teams in baseball, and really didn't need to do all that much. What they've already done, people should be giddy about, but the fact that they could still consider another move or two, I mean, that's just icing on the cake.
It was funny because yesterday, and Brendan played this in the opening of our show, you had the owner, Jim Crane, talking about how, look, we're still looking to do some other things. The Astros then traded Christian Vasquez like 10 minutes later. You had James Click that held his little media gathering like in the seventh, eighth inning of yesterday's game. And he said, we're going to do more stuff. And then he trades Jake Odorizzi like 3 minutes later.
Did they pull Stinky off the bench, or was the odor gone? No. Was the odor gone before the game was over?
No, he stayed in the dugout throughout the game. But by the time the media got into the clubhouse, he was gone. He was gone. Now, when Click said that yesterday in the eighth inning, that we're still going to do more, we'll get something else done, basically, paraphrasing. I don't think he was alluding to Jake Odorizzi. I really don't. And I'm curious your opinion, too. Like, was that the move he was talking about, that we're still going to do more? Or was he alluding to something bigger than that today?
I think there's something bigger. I think for all that we've alluded to it, I think he knows even more so. And it was magnified more within his office walls and the guys that he trusts on his staff that, hey, we just really pulled a fast one. We really saved our reservoir that we had to throw out there as bargaining chips to make some moves. So why should we stop now? Now that we've already covered, you know, a multitude of different areas that we needed to upgrade, we still are sitting in our back with a full back pocket full of cash in terms of resources to say, if we need to give up one of our starters, it better be someone under team control, but we could possibly fill yet another hole. We could maybe upgrade center field. We could do something that people didn't think we were capable of doing and maybe go in a direction we haven't even thought about yet, because we have resources that other teams want that we didn't expect to have after our first day of making three deals.
Yeah, I didn't think that the Odorizzi was what he was alluding to. Now, the question becomes, how do you deploy these guys? How do you use Trey Mancini? How do you use Christian Vasquez? Let's start with, I think we're starting with Vasquez here. Here was Dusty Baker during the game yesterday talking, it was Buster Olney, right?
Yep.
He was in the dugout talking to Buster Olney and how they plan to deploy the new Astro backstop.
You guys make the move today for Trey Mancini. What are your impressions of him? What are your initial thoughts about his role?
Well, I don't really know him, but I've followed him and talked to him a couple times in the past. You know, we both are cancer survivors, and he's a heck of a guy on the stand, a heck of a guy on the team. Not really sure. You know, we're going to try to get him in when I think it's the best, you know, for him and for us.
You get another veteran catcher, Christian Vasquez, a lot of experience in the postseason. How do you envision maybe splitting time between he and Martin?
Well, I haven't really, figured that out yet. I mean, Martin's like, you know, directing our team. I mean, directing our pitching staff. So I'm used both of them. I got two heck of a catchers now, two experienced guys. You know, he can pinch run for Molly. He can pinch hit for Molly on days that he plays, and I just let him play.
He said pinch run.
He
with
sure
Christian
did.
Vasquez. Have you seen, I don't want to body shame anybody, but have you seen Christian Vasquez? Have you seen Christian Vasquez's sprint speed on Baseball Savant? No. To Dusty's credit, he is faster than Martin Maldonado. I think a tortoise is faster than Martin Maldonado.
So is a three-legged horse. I don't know.
When I heard that, I did this. I put my fingers in my temple and started to massage
my
temple.
I did worse than that. I was like, you've got to be kidding me on national TV.
Use Christian Vasquez as a pinch runner, Dusty? What are you talking about?
Well, but because he's and all you can say about Trey Mancini is he's a cancer survivor like me and he's a good guy. No, he's a little bit more than that. I mean, he's an upgrade over what you have. Look, I get it that Dusty's good at Dusty, and we all know that locally. I hate that the national media got a firm taste of what Dusty could be on a daily basis. And it's one thing on the All-Star stage to not even say that you've ever seen the starting pitcher for your team in the All-Star game pitch before, and he pitched against you in the American League Championship Series. It's another thing to have your team go out and acquire two quality baseball players and basically seem absolutely oblivious and clueless, except for like side stories and pinch running. And then on top of all that, you can tell that the loyalty factor, which is a constant issue between Dusty and who Click wants him to play, I'm sure part of it was his response was basically sending a message to James Click. You can go out and get whoever you want. I make this lineup card every day.
Yeah. Mr. Brostash saying that Dusty is faster than Maldonado. But that's a good point.
it's a good comparison.
Now, I understand. What Dusty not knowing who Shane McClanahan is, not knowing what Trey Mancini can be, saying that Christian Vasquez is going to be used as a pinch runner. I know that that doesn't really influence the decisions of what you're doing for the Houston Astros from the first inning all the way to the final out. But it's just man, this guy doesn't really know a whole lot of what's going on with around the rest of the league. So
the fear factor
funny.
From a fan standpoint is you're he's kidding, right? Come on, just get a little bit. Just come on, just give me a little smirk or something to let me know you're not going to tip your hand, but you don't really actually believe that, do you?
It's maddening.
What
it's
if
like not knowing.
Just been trolling us all this whole time.
I wish.
Have
wish
you seen
that
his
would
lineups?
Be the case.
I don't know.
I wish that would be the case. I wish he was trolling. I called him the troll before, not the OG, but the OT, not the original gangster, the original troll, because he trolls us with the lineups. He trolls us by saying he doesn't know who the Shane McClanahan is, even though he's faced him. The Astros have played Trey Mancini. I mean, the Astros, Dusty Baker's managed against Trey Mancini, so I guess he's not sitting in on the scouting report meetings on how they're going to attack Trey Mancini before the game. But all that aside, Dusty, you're going to use Christian Vasquez as a pinch runner. Let's start there, though. Let's start with the catcher. How would you deploy Christian Vasquez with the Houston Astros?
Well, we know that Martin Maldonado has caught more innings than just about any catcher in baseball. And so whether you just call it load management, to use an NBA term, or just making sure your guys are fresh for the playoffs the same way that he likes to overly rest the rest of his lineup, it's now you have better options, right? Because in a lot of cases, when you're resting other guys in this lineup, you've got decent bats, especially with the way Diaz has been hitting the baseball, that you can go to. Now with a catcher, because you know you're not going to just completely fall off with Jason Castro and also lose all the defense and a lot of the abilities behind the plate that he brings. Now you get a guy that's close to him defensively, but is a huge upgrade offensively, to where if you platoon them, you're actually in a better position because Maldi gets healthier. And as long as Maldi's okay with it, because we know I was really glad to hear you say that he was going to go pick up Vasquez today and that they know each other, because I was worried if there was any kind of tension between those two, that it could be a bigger problem than people really could see on the outside because of what Maldi means in that clubhouse and specifically to the pitchers. So the fact that if they work in tandem and it can get Maldi some time off and Vasquez can get comfortable with this staff, that's how I would do it, at least in the short term. And then a better option than Chaz and Siri and Dubon in a lot of cases, when you're looking for an extra guy to DH or you're looking for an extra guy somewhere in your lineup that's a bat, you got a guy.
Let's talk more about how to deploy Vasquez and Mancini on the other side, maybe even Will Smith. Also, someone coming at us on Twitter, a Dusty defender the Christian Vasquez comments during the game yesterday. 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your thoughts, take your questions. 713-780-3776. Trade deadline day. James Click active yesterday with three moves. Is there more in store for the Astros? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, how do you deploy Christian Vasquez, Trey Mancini, Will Smith as well? We played that Dusty Baker quote. The Dusty Baker says he wants to deploy Christian Vasquez as a pinch runner. I guess Christian Vasquez's running ability is going to be the new Carlos Correa mound visits. It's by far their best attribute that they possess as a big league ball player. But Kumami Grill on Twitter said that's not what Dusty was doing. He was showing allegiance to his team. I mean, he flat out said, quote, we could use him as a pinch runner, unquote. Now,
a pinch hitter. And I said he's loyal to his guys. That's why he fights with Click so much.
Pinch hitter's not funny, though. Pinch runner's funny. He is going to be a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
He's going to pinch hit for Maldonado late in games whenever he's not using them.
Like I said, it's a better option than Castro gave you.
Yeah, for sure. This year, 2022, he's a better player now.
Castro, the Astro, had
Castro was, he was a solid offensive catcher for, what he used to be. He's not there
anymore.
I'm
saying, last year, everybody made him heroic because he had a couple of game-winning hits, but...
I mean, last year wasn't his best either.
No.
Last year wasn't his best either. But anyways, we're just having some fun with that. Now, okay, the Astros are in a 6-man rotation. They might be in a 5-man. We'll see. But how many games would you have Vasquez start versus Maldonado?
I said I'd split the time. I mean, I would almost go week to week going 50-50 just so that Maldi could kind of recharge his batteries and rest a little bit more. And Vasquez doesn't feel like he's been relegated to the backup catcher role where he's barely going to play based on being the number one guy for the Red Sox. I believe that's the best way to appease both parties, unless you have an injury or you need to move them around so that Vasquez can get at bats and be your designated hitter from time to time, or you can play him in other ways so that he still gets his at bats and he still gets his starts, even if it's not all behind the plate. But other than that, I think I'd split it. I think early on, though, Maldi still has to be your main guy because Vasquez has to learn this pitching staff. But I think that the more he gets his feet wet and he gets, you know, kind of an understanding and a grasp of the staff, I think I'd get more closer to 50-50.
I think out of the gate, it's probably going to be 60-40 Maldonado. Mm-hmm. I think he starts 3 out of every 5 games. You're going to see Vasquez late in games as a pinch hitter, things like that. Although I like Diaz off the bench a little bit more than Vasquez off the bench if you're not starting Diaz. Now, by the time that I think the playoffs roll around, I think it flips. I think we're going to see a transition from Maldi starting 3 out of every 5 games to by the time that we're close to the playoffs and maybe even get to the playoffs, then you're looking at a Vasquez 60, Maldonado 40. I think it transitions to that as we get further and further away from the trade and closer to the playoffs. The trouble that I have, though, with like when you start to forecast the postseason, and like maybe you go the hot hand, things like that, if you're trading for Vasquez, who is a much better offensive player than Martin Maldonado, I know Maldonado calls a great game, but Vasquez is no slouch defensively either. He's actually a pretty good defensive catcher. I think once you get to the postseason, I think Vasquez could be your everyday guy.
Well, I think that when you look at it, too, the one thing that you're concerned with is we know in the playoffs where everything changes and everything's magnified and any one play can really be a game changer. You'd like to be able to say, I can go and change my catcher out and go to an offensive upgrade. If your offensive upgrade is starting, you're going to be less likely to – you're going to have to burn another guy off the bench to pinch hit and then put Maldi in the game as the defensive catcher, and therefore you burn through an extra guy on your bench if it's a tight game.
Who are you pinch hitting for, though, in that spot? If Vasquez is your starting catcher, you're probably not pinch hitting for Vasquez.
Well, you're probably right. But
like righty, you want to get a lefty in there.
Yeah, a lot of times late in the games and from about the 5th inning on, there's always the consideration of pinch hitting for your catcher. And you're right. I mean, look, if he's hitting the ball like he's capable of hitting the ball, then maybe you don't ever have to consider that. But, it's not going to be where you're going to upgrade the bat if it's going to Maldonado. You're going to have to go to Diaz or someone else off the bench. Right. But you have more depth. I think that's the other thing that people don't take into consideration when they only expect, like, a gold star for the Astros and an A in the trade game if you got Otani or Soto or Hader or a big name, and don't realize most of these teams don't have the depth that the Astros just added. The fact that you can go deep on multiple positions because Diaz is so versatile, because Mancini's versatile, because the fact that you've got two solid catchers now. You've got all these – Dubon can play infield and outfield. You have all these different guys that so many teams don't have that it gives Dusty all kinds of options if he just knows what to do with them.
You have a lot of position flexibility, too, and it leads us to the Mancini. How do you deploy Mancini? Because this year he has more games as the DH than any other position. He's played right field, left field, first base, right field more than the other three defensive positions, the other two defensive positions. He's not really a good defender. In fact, he's probably average to below average defensively everywhere, more of a warm body defensively, getting his bat in the lineup. How do you think that Dusty, or how would you deploy Mancini into this Houston Astro lineup?
I'll be real honest with you. I'm going to make Trey Mancini my starting left fielder, and that's where he's going to play. Until I know what Michael Brantley's health situation is, I don't believe you lose anything defensively because of the fact that Michael Brantley was not a plus defender in left field anyway, and he's played there before. But I think that he is a better bat than any other option that you have in left field. And he, because he is a seasoned veteran player with experience, I'm putting Trey Mancini in left field.
That's where I'm at, too. Like, from like an everyday lineup perspective, because there's going to be days, okay, Kyle Tucker needs a day off. Well, that's great. Trey Mancini can play right field. You move Mancini in right. Then you get like a Diaz or, a Chaz McCormick in left field, whatever you want to do. But from an everyday lineup perspective, he's your left fielder until Michael Brantley comes back. And that's probably an if right now, not a win. because we have no idea with Brantley. And you had the ominous quote last night from James Klick that said, we'll have more news about Michael Brantley later, which scared me. So right now, he's my everyday left fielder, especially with the way that Yuli Gurriel is hitting the baseball. Like, who am I sitting down? Am I sitting down Chaz or am I sitting down Yuli? I'm sitting down Chaz.
No brainer.
So Trey Mancini is my everyday left fielder. Yeah, you can move him around to right.
Chaz
field
may
Tucker
be your center fielder.
Yeah, I mean, right now is currently constructed. Yeah. If you're not making a trade, you're either looking at doing it's Chaz versus Jake. Now, Chaz, I think, has only started one or two games in center field since Jake Myers.
But
has
he has
back.
Sneaky speed that people don't give him enough credit for.
Sure, but it seems like they're committed to Jake. Like, that would have to be a philosophical.
That's
going to
be Dusty versus Klick again. But realizing if you want to win offensively, the upgrade you get alone just by a guy that doesn't look overmatched in Chaz, and because of the fact that the way Myers is playing center field right now, he's playing tentative and he's playing scared. I don't think you lose what you the chances to really get good out of it other than are far outweigh what you could fail by doing this move. I just believe that because this is a World Series caliber team, Chaz McCormick gives you a better chance to win every night right now than Jake Myers.
Yeah, I think that Myers probably has more potential, but how they're playing right now, sure. I'll take Chaz, but we have to see what's going to happen. But I don't think it really implies to like how you deploy Trey Mancini, because Mancini's not going to affect Chaz and Jake Myers competition, if you want to call it that, in center field. But a lot of people when the Astros made this trade, it was, okay, well, you have Trey Mancini and now Yuli Gurriel can kick rocks. Yuli Gurriel is now no longer in this lineup. Whenever I saw the Astros trading for Trey Mancini, as currently it stands with Michael Brantley on the injured list, and James Klick will tell us more about Michael Brantley later, he says, he's your everyday left fielder. He's not your everyday first baseman.
Completely agree. That was my thinking all along. And the minute the move was made, I said, more than anything else, this tells you that whether they're telling us the truth or not, that you have an insurance policy if Michael Brantley's done for the year. And based on what I saw, what we talked about yesterday, about when he was warming up over the weekend, that he couldn't even use his glove hand to catch. He had to catch and throw with the same hand because the shoulder was still needing to be nursed, and they were still that tentative about his shoulder. That's not a guy that's ready to come off anytime soon and be able to help you. And the insurance policy you get with a seasoned veteran like Mancini, that, like we said, his number should go up in Minute Maid, I couldn't be happier with the move for that reason alone.
Now, okay, Mancini's an everyday starter for us. Mm-hmm. He's our starting left fielder until you have more understanding of Michael Brantley, or until Michael Brantley returns, and then you figure it out from there. Mm-hmm. How about the batting order?
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking about, does Brantley go back to the two-hole if Yuli's been hitting so well in the two-hole?
We're assuming Brantley's not here.
So if Brantley's not there, I don't think I mess with the way the top of the lineup has been production-wise lately, because it's really kind of been an awakening for Yuli. So I go Altuve, Yuli, Yordan, and then you can go back and forth and fight about it with Bregman and then Tucker, right? So then you got 4 and 5. 6 to me is Mancini.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pena at 7, and then center field and catcher.
That's pretty much how I had it. I had it the exact same way when I was starting to think about it. Look, it's not going to be like this every day because dudes are going to have days off.
Right.
But if you think about it from like an everyday perspective, if the playoffs started tomorrow, what are you rolling out there? Look, I'll concede. Okay, Yuli Gurriel's been great the last 30 days. He's red hot. It seems like he's really taking like a fish to water, hitting in the two-hole in front of Yordan. He's getting on base. Fine. You can have that, Houston. You win that. Yuli in the two-hole for me. The first question that I really had, is Bregman or Mancini a better offensive player right now? That's a toss-up. Now, Bregman's like slugging numbers are slightly better because he's playing at Minute Maid, not Camden. The first question I had was, who should be, if I'm committed to Yordan in the three-hole and Tucker in the five-hole, who should be sandwiched between the two? Because we know Dusty likes lineup feng shui. He wants to split the lefties. So, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, or do you go Mancini instead of Bregman in that cleanup spot?
I think Bregman has really been hot. That's why I really kind of, I know what, you know, you obviously understand it with paternity leave, but I hated to see him take up to 3 games off, because he's been red hot and he's really figuring things out and his swagger's back and all the things, the intangibles that make Alex Bregman have made Alex Bregman in the past for this team seem to be coming back. So therefore, I wouldn't tinker too much with Bregman for the time being, because his psyche has been so rattled over the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I would leave him where he's at. Mancini's going to be happy to be there. He's not going to ruffle any feathers, and he's just going to be in the lineup wherever you play him. And I think then you see how it goes. Now, if one guy starts getting hot and really starts to explode and the other guy's struggling a little bit, you have the option to be able to flip-flop, although Dusty doesn't like to normally do that.
Right.
But if you see fit, you can always switch it. But I would let it play out with Bregman where he's been because he's been hot.
And I think Dusty, like, to break a tie, I think Dusty's going to go to the guys who's been here longer,
sure.
Be loyal to that guy. So ultimately, I agree with that same exact lineup. Altuve, Yuli, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Mancini, and then Pena. I actually put Vasquez.
I would move Vasquez up one, too, especially when he's in the lineup.
And let that center fielder be that second leadoff in the ninth spot. How would you deploy Trey Mancini, Christian Vasquez? Where would you slot him in defensively and in the batting order as well? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, so the trade of Mancini, are there concerns? Is this the sign for Michael Brantley, though? And under our scenario, we just drew up Yuli as the primary first baseman on this team. Is that all right? Is it okay if Yuli is still the primary first baseman on the Houston Astros when the deadline at 5 o'clock passes today? Yuli, the way he was hitting early in the year, would lead someone to drinking. The way he's hitting lately, though, last 30 days, you'd probably be drinking a celebratory drink. You can do both with Gentle Ben. Vodka, gin, bourbon, you can do all of those with Gentle Ben as well. A local Texas brand, Gentle Ben Spirits, you know them. They use a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art innovative Prosecco craft technology that's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben. Compare it to your brand, and you're going to taste a huge difference. Same difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M Class of 85, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin, and ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is so smooth. It is so clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. As you know, you can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentleben.com. But if you're in the League City area, head to Hills Liquor on South Shore. If you're in the Pearland area, head to Broadway Liquor. Also, if you're going to be in the Diamond Seats at Minute Maid Park, Gentle Ben carried inside the Diamond Seats at Minute Maid Park. Also, I just mentioned that bourbon. You can only get that at the tasting room in Alvin, though. 94-proof bourbon, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year, and exclusive to the tasting room in Alvin. It's fantasy football season. You want to step up your fantasy football game? You need a place to host your fantasy football draft? Why don't you try that tasting room in Alvin? A great spot to class up your league. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Wheel. Fun.
ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. It is trade deadline day in Major League Baseball. The Astros with three trades yesterday, as we know. Trade for Trey happened. The Killer Bees are James Click. We said trade for Trey Mancini since late June. We said, yeah, we love Christian Vasquez. And we said trade Jake Odorizzi. Get to over easy out of town. And James Click did it all. We just moonlight as radio hosts. We're really the Houston Astros general manager combined effort. But the Trey Mancini.
Thanks to the Cardinals for giving us all the email information so we could still break in.
Yeah, thank you, Carlos Correa. It wasn't a mound visit. It was a station visit.
That's right.
I believe. I would have to look back to find it. I'm fairly certain Jeremy said earlier in the season that he has a direct line to the Astros.
Oh, yeah. That was whenever Granato was telling me that.
You were going to lead to them not making any trades.
Yeah, and Click was DMing me. Yeah, that's right. That did happen. That's a true thing. And that's why we were so we had so much influence in the Houston Astros making the three trades yesterday. Again, we've been calling for Mancini since June.
Look,
we like the idea of Vasquez.
Let's just be brutally honest about it. But you convinced me that was the guy that they should go get. And so you started every bit of it, and you were right.
Yeah, okay. Well, we also like the Vasquez thing, and we both wanted the trade Odorizzi thing. So James Click's pretty much done exactly what we've wanted him to do. It's awesome. 713-780-ESPN.
If you missed Jake Odorizzi, like some of you for some weird reason do, send flowers to Late Hits in care of ESPN 97.5 Patrick Creighton.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good idea. Yep. Did you hear the latest trade?
No.
Joey Gallo is on the move.
Dodgers.
He's going from one big market of New York to the other big market of Los Angeles. So Los Angeles now has two Cody Bellingers on their team, or two Joey Gallos, whichever way you want to look at it. Also, Eric Hosmer apparently being traded to the Boston Red Sox. Padres eating most of the salary Hosmer's owed over the next 3 years. I guess Hosmer turned down the trade. That
he had 10 teams that he had a no trade to.
Okay, and Washington was one of them?
Yeah, and Washington was one of them. But basically the writing was on the wall that he wasn't coming back to the Padres because Josh Bell was going to be your first baseman. So they did him a solid, I guess, and moved him to a different team that wasn't one of those 10 teams that he had blocked.
That's pretty funny. I don't really blame Hosmer for doing that at all. Why would you want to go play baseball for the Washington
Nationals? You think Cody Bellinger wants to be a nut bumper? Because that could bring Joey Gallo out of his doldrums.
I wouldn't be shocked if Joey Gallo finds a little bit something. I think he's going to – I think I'm not going to say he's going to take off, but I think he'll be closer to the player he was in Texas than the player he was in New York.
When they were doing that junk-punching, nut-bumping thing in Texas was when he was
at his
best.
That wasn't all they were doing.
Well, okay, but he was – that's when – I don't want to know, but that was when he was actually flourishing. So maybe if Cody Bellinger wants to do a little cup bumping – yeah, he'll find the fountain of youth.
That wasn't a bad trade for Boston, though. You get a Hosmer who's a pretty good offensive player for another team paying pretty much his entire salary.
I mean, the same way that, although I did see your buddy, Brendan, Jared Carrabas.
Paul Gallant.
No, Jared Carrabas, who's coming on tomorrow?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Because with the Red Sox moves last night, and I don't know if you saw by chance who they replaced Vasquez with another trade, but
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah,
I knew at some point you were going to make it.
Well,
to this.
No. I didn't. I'm referencing Jared's tweet.
Oh yeah, who is he or whatever?
Yeah. So if you don't know the catcher that the Red Sox had acquired, and his name escapes me right now, but the one
Reese McGuire,
Reese McGuire,
a former Cookie Reese and Mark McGuire,
a former first round draft pick, but was with the Blue Jays when he was caught masturbating in public. And therefore, was more than expendable. The Red Sox picked him up, and Jared decided to tweet, because they also picked up Tommy Pham from the Reds. He goes, so let me get this straight, because he's a Red Sox fan. The Red Sox just picked up one guy that'll slap you if you screw him in fantasy football, and another guy that masturbates in public. Okay, that's quite a trade deadline for the Boston Red Sox. It's like, yeah, if you're a Red Sox fan, not a good look that makes you happy with what they've done so far. But if you pick up a Hosmer for nothing.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You know, Reese McGuire must be pretty good at baseball, though, if he survived that. For real. Like a legitimate take out of that story?
Yeah, but that's not a base. I mean, look, I don't think if he survived that.
But it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for an organization. Yes. So you got to be pretty good to survive that.
See, I don't think it's as, because it's not as severe as committing a crime or any kind of like domestic abuse or drug abuse or all these other things. Yes, it's embarrassing, but if you can play baseball, you can play baseball and teams are going to give you a shot.
That's got to be a crime.
Are you justifying that? Are you normalizing
that? I'm not saying that I'm going to go out there and do that. I'm just saying that, you know, he could do a lot worse. He didn't do anything that broke the law,
It is against the law. That's what is it, public indecency? I think he got a fine. I think he did.
I don't know all the details. I don't know if he was hiding in his car and a cop walked by, or if he was, you know, jumping up and down naked on the sidewalk.
Did you do a deep dive?
No.
I thought you might.
No. Nope.
I thought
nope.
You might.
I just thought it was extremely amusing because I saw a lot of people tweeting about it. Allison Craig, who's a legal analyst who was on the show several times when we were dealing with the Astros when they picked up Osuna, and she's a big Blue Jays fan, and she started tweeting. She started at first going, I want to chuckle so hard, but she goes, I don't know how many people know the story. So I'm like, wait a minute, what story? And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, boy. I texted you guys going, yeesh.
I remember when it happened, but I had forgotten about it. I forgot that it was associated with Reese McGuire. So that was the worst thing that could happen to Reese McGuire is that he got traded, and it all resurfaced again, especially in a big market. Like,
he
it's
can
one
survive
thing-
if, what's his name, the actor, Hugh, not Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Grant?
Hugh Grant.
Yeah, Hugh Grant's a bigger star.
He survived it.
He's a star. Okay. He did the same thing.
Yeah.
I had no idea. 713-780-ESP. You know a lot about this. You know a lot about this kind of stuff.
If these things make the news, you know my memory's pretty good.
That is true. You do have a steel trap up there. 713-780-3776. All right. Mancini to the Astros. Is this a sign of Michael Brantley's shoulder?
I really think it is. I think that, you know, as much as we all hope for the best and hope that as good of a hitter as he is, that's something that you desperately want more than anything else, that you want come playoff time. It's very worrisome that Click wasn't giving an update only to say that he wasn't done for the year. But then you can't bring any positives out of, and you and I were talking about it before the show, like everything that's kind of the smoke signals coming out of whatever you mention when you talk about Michael Brantley is more like hoping and crossing your fingers that he's going to be okay. But then when you see the video that he can't even catch with the left shoulder or whichever shoulder it is, he can't catch with it. They don't want him, you know, doing anything to it. If you can't catch a baseball with that arm, but you're expecting him to swing a baseball bat and have all that kind of torque and figure that, yeah, there's a chance he's coming back. I believe that the writing on the wall came in two different directions yesterday with the moves they made. One is Jason Castro is done. Mm-hmm. His career's over. And two, that there is serious concern about the availability of Michael Brantley the rest of the season in the postseason.
Now, if you knew that Brantley was coming back, and let's make that assumption for just a second, even though we know what assumption means, that doesn't prevent you from making the Trey Mancini trade.
No, but you don't need – there's the urgency isn't as great to have to do something.
But you also didn't trade much. Like, you got a great deal for Mancini.
Yeah, you did, but – you know, Yuli has been picking it up a lot lately, so it still gives you a better option, even if Mancini's on the bench, that's spelling you time at DH and at first base. But I think that it became more pressing for James Click to do something with a bat, with an outfield position, corner outfield position, because of what they were concerned about with Brantley.
And that's like what our lure was to Mancini, was that, okay, if Yuli's struggling, he's your first baseman. Okay, if Brantley's not back, he's your left fielder. So I love that aspect of it. I don't think that you are not going to trade for Trey Mancini if you expect Michael Brantley back. I'll be honest with this. I'm torn on this. Because every time the Astros have been... like, if the Astros stand on a table and give you something firm, they've not been lying. Whether it was Jordan's hand injury, which Jordan hasn't shown a sign of this hand being hurt in a long time, like the first series, the first day off after the All-Star break, and he's taken BP, he looks great. Jeremy Peña avoided serious injury. Jake Odorizzi avoided serious injury. So when the Astros are willing to give you something firm, they've not lied about it. Now, they'll be vague.
They just allow people to feel discomfort.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But have they lied? Like, have you caught them in a lie about anything?
No, I'm just saying because they use discomfort.
Right. Everything's discomfort. Yeah, discomfort could be you're back tomorrow.
It's the most
general
way of putting out something and saying nothing.
Not arguing that the Astros have been vague and have been very broad and mysterious about injuries. But whenever they give you something definitive, they've been truthful. So I'm torn on this. I'm torn on the James Click ominous quote yesterday of, well, I'll have more on Michael Brantley later. But then 2 weeks ago, he's over on the cardiac arrest, and he's talking about, oh, no. Brantley's not out for the entire season. Now, you could tell me that he was using that because of the trade deadline, and he doesn't want other teams to think.
Yeah, he doesn't want other teams to think you're desperate.
He doesn't want other teams to think it, like they're operating out of an area of weakness that, oh, we have to have a left fielder because we know Brantley's gone. So that's where I'm kind of confused. Like, the fact that Click said it's not a season-long injury, okay, I'm going to take you at your word for that. But I could also see Click being smart enough to know that he doesn't want other teams to know that Michael Brantley has a torn labrum and he's out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think he was forward thinking and just deciding, hey, you know what? Teams find intel a million different ways.
Yep.
I'm not tipping my hand. I'm not telling anybody how I really feel about what Brantley's situation is so that I can go out and not get fleeced in a trade. He did all those things. I'd be very curious how he gives us, when he gives us the next Brantley. I think right after the trade deadline, he will give you a Brantley update now because he got done what he needed to get done.
They'll probably have a presser tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Post-deadline presser, talk about all of that. So I'm torn. I don't know whether I'm taking Click at his word or if Click's playing a little bit of poker here and he doesn't want the rest of the league to know that Brantley's done for the year. So I guess we'll hurry up and wait. 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your thoughts. 713-780-3776. We didn't get to the Yuli thing. If Yuli's still the primary first baseman at 5:01 p.m. today, is that okay? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you again about Doc Linville. Look, if you guys are out there and you're experiencing hair loss, thinning spots on your head, and you don't want the sprays and creams and foams and the different ways you can mask the problem, but you don't solve the problem, then I need you to talk to my good friend, Doc Linville, because Doc Linville, he takes care of ESPN listeners, so he's not going to charge you for the consultation. But go to 975hair.com and set one up and go talk to him. Show him what you got. Show him where your thin spots are or where your bald spots are, and then let him show you how he can help with the NeoGraft procedure. Because the NeoGraft procedure is unlike all the other things that I mentioned, because it's not trying to mask the problem, it's trying to solve it and fix it. Look, genetically, and he's shown me the results, the sides in the back of your head are always going to have hair. It's the other troublesome areas, like the baboon's butt on the top and the back, and your forehead turning to an 8 head on your hairline. He can help you with those things by using the NeoGraft procedure, because it's taking hair from areas where you have a ton, putting it where you don't have much or any, and giving you an overall better coverage area, a better appearance, and more self-confidence within the process. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com, and in that consultation, ask the tough questions, from financing options to how the procedure goes to how it's numbed up and the pain that you might go through. I went through zero pain and minimal swelling. And then basically understand that the time process is between 6 and 9 months to see the full results. And also realize the biggest thing to me, it's a 95%+ success rate for every follicle move. That means when they move one and replant one, it's going to grow, it's going to thicken up, and it's going to show. That's the things you need to know. Check them out today. It's 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Hall of Fame Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
5:01 today. The Astros still have Yuli Gurriel as their everyday first baseman.
Sounds like this opening to 60 Minutes. Just
yeah, the one that you're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the clock's ticking, 5:01. Now, do they do the grace period like the NBA? Like, if you're starting to talk trade at 4:59, yeah, as long as you're progressing towards a deal, we'll allow it.
Let me call up Manfred Nass.
Will you? You and Robbie, yeah. You got it. Is it on your phone? You have it saved at Robbie?
A little closer with Robbie than I am Tony Clark. Yeah,
okay.
A little bit. I think so. I don't. I think like as long as you have like told the league, okay, this is a trade that's happening, we'll send over the paperwork coming up in the next few minutes. I think so, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I think so though. But yeah, you're like, and a lot of times it takes a little while to get out to the Passons, right, Olneys, Rosenthals of the world, and you hear about it at like 5:30. But after the deadline, Yuli Gurriel, still the everyday first baseman for the Astros, is that okay?
Based on what I've seen recently, I don't think it's teasing anymore. I think that he's figuring things some things out. A lot of people believe it is going into that two hole, and for whatever the reason of seeing better pitches or, you know, just feeling more comfortable, he has looked like he's settled in now, and he's all he needs to be for this team. So I'm fine with it. Like a month ago, if you'd asked me that, look, he'd go for a couple games where he'd give you glimpses, and then he'd go right back. And, you know, we weren't seeing the power stroke. We knew he could hit doubles, but we weren't seeing him going the other way a lot. We weren't seeing what typical Yuli was, and I always mention his propensity for being able to get a runner in from third base with less than two outs. We're seeing all these different things from Yuli right now to where I believe that you're going to be just fine with Yuli at first base. And because you have an insurance plan now, too, it's probably going to motivate him even more to realize, I want to stay here. I love doing this, what I'm doing, and where I'm doing it. I'm going to continue to have to hit the ball.
Yeah. He showed some power, too. Was it yesterday that he doubled off the wall in right center field? Like, we haven't seen much power from Yuli, even in this resurgence over the last 30 games or whatever, where he's flirting with the 300 batting average. We still haven't seen a whole lot of slugging for him. I was very pleased to see him drive a ball off the wall and opposite, you know, in right center field going the other way. So that was a good sign. I'm okay with it. And I know I've been banging the table. That's why I originally was banging the table for Trey Mancini, because I was worried that Yuli was washed. And look, he could still revert back to that. Like, it's been a tale of two seasons for Yuli. Prior to these 35 games or so, awful. These last 35 games, it looks more like Yuli Gurriel, which is refreshing. Well, but also the position flexibility that Trey Mancini brings to this team is why I'm okay if the Astros don't trade for a corner infielder.
They've got an insurance policy. They've got a capable guy to fill in multiple roles. I think that, you know, this, just like I said for Mancini, coming from Baltimore to Houston, the biggest thing is he's going to see a whole lot better pitches, because there are so many holes in that Orioles lineup that there were pitchers that weren't going to – they knew Trey Mancini could beat them, so they were going to pitch around him. Now there's too many guys in this lineup that you can't afford to pitch around because of the guys that are in the middle of the lineup and guys that can do damage. Mancini's going to see better pitches, and he's going to hit in a more hitter-friendly ballpark. He should explode, and I believe the same thing that he sees is why Yuli's seeing better pitches in the two-hole, because, you know, being buried at the bottom of the lineup when he was scuffling and you knew – that you didn't want to pitch to him because of the last three guys in the lineup. If you just put him on or pitch around him, and all you got to do is get around, pitch to Maldi or Myers or someone at the bottom of the lineup, okay, no skin off my back. But now if you're hitting in the two hole, and you know coming up behind Yuli is going to be, you know, Yordan and Breggy and Tucker, You don't want any part of that. So, he, of course, he's going to see better pitches. If he just knows, like you said and I both said, if he can go the other way and show a little pop doing it and get back to his old swing where he's not trying to pull everything and he's going to see better pitches, that should be a recipe for a lot of success for him in the two-hole.
The good thing, though, about Yuli's like resurgence over the last 30 games is it's not been all dependent of being in the two-hole, because that 30 games, you know, is longer of a stretch than where he's been hitting in this two spot. What's it, 4 or 5 games where he's been batting second for the Houston Astros? So, like, he just didn't start to hit because they moved him into the second spot. Like, it's not artificial. He was hitting prior to that, and now, yeah, you're right. All of the other stuff on top of it. Jordan pitch hitting behind him. It's able to create a lot of offense for Yuli Gurriel. And I got to eat some crow on it. I was very critical of Yuli Gurriel in the second spot. And he's outperforming the expectations I had for him in the second spot and the expectations that I think were just for what he had been as an offensive player.
I questioned it because it wasn't a Dusty-type move either, to all of a sudden slide a guy up, as opposed to when a guy in the two-hole is out, you just replace his replacement hits in the two-hole. But you don't do the kind of things that Dusty did in this situation, and I questioned it too. But look, it's worked out, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just keep him there, and he's hot, and he's hitting well in that spot. And just keep rolling with it because they've had a ton of success.
Yeah, it's been a good thing for the Astros. You hope Yuli continues. But if he's the everyday first baseman after the deadline, I'm good with it because he's been hot and you do have the insurance option of Trey Mancini. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Of course, Yuli at first base is okay. He's finding his groove. And who else is available at this point that makes sense for Click? I'd rather add more bullpen help or
you
focus
got
on
him.
Center field, 0-4-4-1.
But you already got him. I mean, the texture, it's fine that you think that way, but who else is out there and available? You don't need to go out.
Get Mancini?
Yeah, you already got Mancini, who's played first base. You can just pop him in there if you need him. So you already got a guy on your roster. That's why I said the insurance policy at multiple positions is huge.
Vasquez can play some first base,
sure.
Too, but I don't really, you know, his offense is good for a catcher. What he does offensively, not great for a first baseman. Ryan says, does our new catcher do mound visits? We need that back to get to the World Series. I think
it is bilateral, so that helps.
Bilateral?
Yeah.
What in the world does that mean?
You don't remember that quote?
From what?
Stanley Roberts.
Yeah,
instead of bilingual, he said bilateral.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Stanley Roberts, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. 713-780-ESPN. Julia Morales will be joining us at the top of the hour, too, by the way. So make sure you're tuned into that. 0-4-4-1, pick one to re-sign after this season. Trey Mancini, Christian Vasquez, or Will Smith?
I think the logical one to me is Vasquez. Because Maldi's free.
He's got a vesting option that he looks like he's going to hit. So I think he's back.
Okay. Because I just felt like, as much as I've been a big fan of Mancini and I think that he helps him in so many ways, then you're basically saying one or the other is going to go. Are you more comfortable with Maldi going or Yuli? Because in order to keep either one of those guys that I believe, because I think Smith is easy first
he's
one
actually
to say
under
he's out.
Contract, but you have a club option and you buy him out for $1 million. He's making $13 million next year.
Yeah, and you don't want to pay anybody in your pen $13 million, short of Ryan Pressly. So I think that it's down to either Vasquez or Mancini, and I think that I thought Maldi was done at the end of the year. If he does get to those kind of levels to where he will be back, mm-hmm. then it changes everybody's thinking, and it's especially for the 162.
But even then, he's probably to me. I wouldn't go into next year with Maldi as my starting catcher.
He would. I mean, he thinks he's earned it. I really believe that.
But,
and I believe the clubhouse loves him. But if he's okay going to be the backup catcher, that's great. And you can still do something like you're probably going to do the rest of this regular season in terms of splitting time between the two. But I think Vasquez has still got – he's a poor man's version of all these different catchers that everybody's been talking about as possible upgrades for the Astros. He hits. He plays better than average defense. And he's a great clubhouse guy. I think that I would really consider strongly bringing him back.
I think the question here is Mancini or Vasquez.
Right.
You can eliminate Will Smith because he does have $13 million the option next year, but you control the option, $1 million buyout. There's no chance that Will Smith is on this team next year with the $13 million.
Right.
Now, if he pitches well.
He's also from Georgia and loved playing for the Braves.
Yeah.
So if there's a chance to go home, you best bet he will.
Like Verlander wouldn't be on the Astros next year for his current contract. Will Smith won't be on the Astros next year for his current contract. I think Verlander has a good chance of being an Astro next year, but it won't be under his current contract.
And keep in mind, Elias is already tweeting about bringing Mancini back to Baltimore because he's such a folk hero. So that's not out of the realm either.
No. Now, Mancini has a mutual option for next year at $10 million. I don't think that Trey Mancini is going to pick that up, even if he loves the Houston Astros, because I think he's going to want to be a free agent. But if I have the option, I can pick any one of the three, the deadline acquisitions from yesterday, give me Trey Mancini. Mancini's the better player. He's the better offensive player. I like Vasquez, but I think you can find a Vasquez type in free agency for cheaper than you can find a Mancini type. So if I only get one, give me the Trey Mancini.
Depends. What do you think Vasquez is going to cost?
I don't think he'll cost a ton. He's making $7 million right now. I could see, like, you know, 3 years, $21 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you continue to give him seven and a half over a 2 or 3 year span, I think he'd be giddy about being able to lock himself into that.
Beauty is you can sign more than one. Who would you pick? 713-780-ESPN. You only get one to re-sign. Trey Mancini, Christian Vasquez, or Will Smith. All right, Julia Morales, the on-field reporter for the Houston Astros on AT&T SportsNet. She joins the Killer Bees when we return on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.